accepting what they were offered, and waiting to be summoned to load the ice. They had arrived in the coolness of early morning, but the drinking meant delay. By noon, the wagon was still empty, the four horses still tethered to a tree, the Negroes sitting with their backs to the ice house and their long legs stretched out. Perhaps the racket from inside told them there would be no hurry. In any case, they expected to leave at dusk, for not even the rankest newcomer would risk hauling ice across the island in the mid-afternoon heat. Just as they had begun to doze, they were called. Mr. Hand stood and swayed on the veranda. "He was ready," he yelled. He had to repeat it before his words were understood. Some other men came out of the ice house and argued with him. Mr. Hand took them over to the wagon and showed them the sheets of canvas he had brought. He urged the men to watch as the Negro swung the big wagon to the back door, and he supervised the loading, distributing sawdust between the great blocks of ice, as if cementing for good the foundations of an imperial building. For an hour or more, the Negroes labored, two men to a cake, and Mr. Hand joked to them about it. Had they known water to be so heavy? An enormous block was winched from the door. Jean-Paul, who was the leader of the three, withdrew an ice pick from his shirt and began to work its stiletto point on that block. There was a shout from Mr. Hand, again the unexpected voice, and Jean-Paul stood and patiently wiped the ice pick on his arm. When the block was loaded, the wheels were at a slant, and the floor of the wagon had squashed the springs to such an extent that the planks rested on the axle trees. Mr. Hand continued to trowel the sawdust and separate the cakes with canvas, until at last all the ice was loaded, and the four horses hitched. The news of the loading had reached the men drinking in the ice house. A noisy crowd gathered on the veranda to watch the tipping wagon creak down Regent Street, Mr. Hand holding the reins, Makake and Jacket tugging the bridles of the forward horses, John Paul sauntering at the rear. Their progress was slow, and even before they disappeared past the tiled kiln at the far end of the street, many of the ice house men had left the veranda to seek the cool bar. Past the Wallace estate and the Villeneuve dairy, the milestone at the flour mill. Children had followed, but they too dropped back because of the heat. Others had watched from doorways, attracted by the size of the load and the rumble and wobble of the wheels and the rutted lanes. Now, no one followed. There were no more houses. They had begun to climb the first range of hills. In this heat, on the exposed road, the birds were tiny and silent, and the flowers had no aroma. There was only a sawing of locusts and a smell of dust. From time to time, Jacket glimpsed the straining horse he held and looked over at Makake, who frowned at the higher hills beyond. The hills loomed. No one saw the hole in the road, only the toppling horses, the one behind Jacket rearing from a broken trace, and free of one strap, swinging himself and snapping another. Empty, the wagon had seemed secure, but this weight and the shock of the sudden hole made it shudder feebly and looked as if it might burst. Jacket calmed the horse and quickly roped him. The others steadied the wagon. Mr. Hand, asleep on his seat, had tumbled to his knees. He woke and swore at the men, then at the horses, and he cursed the broken straps. But he had more straps in the chest he had brought, and he was so absorbed in the repair he did not leave the road. He mended the traces, spurning the men's help, in the middle of the north road, squinting in the sunshine. They were soon on their way. There was a rime of froth on the necks and fetlocks of the horses, and great syrupy strings of yellow saliva dripped from their jaws. The road narrowed as it grew steep. Then it opened again. The horses fought for footing. The wheels chimed as they banged against the wagon. The Negroes did not sing as they had on the early morning ride, nor did they speak. Mr. Hand nodded, sat upright, slumped again, and was asleep. Sensing the wagon slowing, John Paul put his shoulder under the back flap and gave a push. His shoulder was soaked. The wagon had begun to drip, dark pennies in the dust that dried almost as soon as they formed. He placed